Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and tonight we continue our expectations series. We're going to talk about two players, Ryan Eckley, a punter entirely new to the Ravens, and Kyle Hamilton, a central figure, obviously, in the Ravens defense, if not the central figure. Joining me to talk about those two is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me, man.
Josh, always a pleasure, and he comes to us from Alaska. We're recording this beginning at 2:02 a.m., so we have to make concessions to Alaska time and the fact that Josh has kids who like to stay up and make a lot of noise. So this is often the time of night we can get together to do these kind of things. But Ryan Eckley, an interesting pick by the Ravens in round six, pick 211 out of Michigan State. I know very little about him. I've watched a little bit since in terms of his punting way, but he did lead the entire, maybe he was second, but he was at the very top of the NCAA in terms of gross yards per attempt this last year at 47.7.
Yeah, those were my first notes on him. And really, it's not necessarily because he has like the biggest leg. I mean, if you were looking for guys who have bigger legs, the Georgia punter had definitely the bigger leg of the I think Brett Thorson of the two. But where Eckley kind of shines is more so in his technical proficiency, as far as, you know, being able to make life harder on returners with the kind of balls that he delivers down there down the field. So I watched quite a bit of him just because I really wanted to nail my mock draft punter picks. I mean, a lot of times I just kind of went with Thorson just because I like the Aussie thing, but the more I kind of dove into Eckley, I was like, oh, kind of like this guy too, and apparently so do the Ravens.
It is an interesting pick, and you know, I don't know for a fact if this has happened, but my guess is that Randy Brown knows him very well because all of the kickers and a lot of the punters come through Randy Brown's camps, and so he probably has a very good idea of who Eckley is, you know, before this. He probably has gone down there, watch him work out, the scout. You don't have to have a 30-man visit for a player like Eckley. You just go visit him, particularly, you know, if you're having Randy Brown do a trip around the country to look at three or four guys that he likes from his own camps. That's the simple way to do it, not waste your 30-man visits. Eckley is a guy who outkicked his coverage a fair amount for the year, despite a very low hang time for a draftable punter at 4.07. It's exceptionally low. It's a very unusual combination that he would have the kind of length on his kicks, the gross averages he has with that kind of hang time. It's completely understandable that his return average was pretty high. Yards per return were at 13.5 with over half of his punts returned, which is also, both those numbers are bad. So hopefully this is something where, you know, the coaches and I think like Cook will work with him to work on directional punting efforts that really keep a ball from being returned or minimize return impact in the NFL. Like, really, Cook was a master of kind of getting the ball to the sideline, so he really narrowed the return area. And I think we'll probably see attempts to do that with Eckley.
Yeah, those are some of the weaknesses that I had jotted down too. Just, you know, that low hang time. In college, you can kind of sort of get away with it, but NFL, man, those guys can get up on that ball real quick, and then it'll give them more opportunities to set up blockers, get upfield, and potentially make a long return. So that's one of the weaknesses I had in his game. Definitely something that you want to, you know, address, you know, heading into the NFL. But I know that my whole thing is, if Randy Brown likes this guy and he's the – they get laid him. I think he was the first. I think he was the first punter taken this year. Like first, he wasn't the first kicker. The first specialist. I think that was like Trey Smack from Florida, the kicker. But I think he was like the first or second punter off the board. So I trust Randy Brown's judgment, especially because he's the kind of guy that runs the specialist thing at the combine too. Mm-hmm. So he's gotten extensive looks at Eckley and all the punters, kind of put them through the ringer. And one of the other underrated strengths for Eckley is that he has extensive holding experience, which a guy like Jordan Stout didn't have coming into the league. It kind of took a while for him. I mean, a lot of people who like are kicking aficionados kind of point towards Jordan Stout's development as a holder as the part of, you know, where just some of Justin Tucker's later career struggles kind of came into play.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly heard that, and we questioned ourselves whether or not it was Tucker or Stout who was causing the problems, as Tucker's decline phase happened exactly happen when Stout, you know, came into the league. I don't think that was honestly the case from hearing from various sources. I think Stout was an excellent holder, and it certainly showed up this last year for Loop that Stout was an excellent holder. And I think that, you know, there were, I'm not saying there were no pains in terms of learning. I'm sure there were, but really trust the law firm of Brown, Cook and Moore to teach that as needed. And, it's a great three man group to have doing that, a long snapper. And of course, Cook, the ex Hall of Fame, effectively holder, and Brown, the best kicking coach in the game. So they've got a lot to work with there. And I hope that Eckley becomes what he needs to be in both elements of his job, because he's certainly got the coaching to hope that would be the case.
Absolutely.
Clean medicals on this guy. I don't have a lot more to say about him. Other than I've seen him. He held on a 63-yard field goal today. That's a good thing. You know, it's hard for me to, I think it was him. I don't think it was Elzinga. Elzinga is also there in camp, but, Luke made a 63-yard kick today, right down the middle, more or less. That was good by at least 5 yards. So nice. It's one of those kicks that you really look and say, okay, maybe he's put some of that behind him, and he's going to make some kicks over 50 yards this year.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of that, you know, kind of starts with the holders. So when you have a guy that has extensive holding experience, you kind of have that, I would say, built-in confidence, but you come into it knowing that, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. This isn't his first time doing this. You know, I can trust that this guy's going to, you know, be able to turn the ball where I want to place it. Because I think every kick, I know most kickers, you know, kind of kick away from the laces or whatever, but I know certain guys like having certain balls, you know, turned a certain way for how they want to do it. And it kind of depends on distance too. You're gonna want to put more arc on certain balls, and then weather and all that kind of factors into. But Randy Brown knows what he's doing. He'll figure all that stuff out.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll look forward to we'll look at 2026 and talk about a good season first of all. There, what does that look like to you?
Okay, I got a couple of things jotted down here. For me, it's just consistency and execution. You know, with Shanks few and far between. Hopefully none. Just no mistakes, you know, as a holder, because you got Tyler Luke going into the second season, and, you know, that guy's confidence, you know, really heading into this year can really kind of go either way. So yeah. The least amount of unforced errors as possible would be great. Then another thing is just make life hard on returners with a bag of different punts. You know, just like going to the Sam Cook School of Directional Punting. You know, you don't have to learn all. I think what did they say at the end of his career? He had like 60 something different punts. You don't got to learn all of those in year one, but you know some of the staples that kind of, you know, in directional punting and just kind of just kind of becoming more of a technician in that standpoint. That's constitutes a good season for me.
Hopefully, Sam Cook understands the value of after work from a consulting sense, that he knows that he can get multiple years of training on per punter by coming back and teaching him more the second year. And I think it would make sense anyway for that relationship to continue year after year. I've got for his good season wins a punt role in camp and preseason. So it you know, how long they keep Elzinga in camp is probably an indicator of exactly how they feel about Eckley in terms of how he's going along. But he wins the punt role in camp and preseason. I'll just say that he goes effectively unnoticed as a rookie with no really bad holds, no big ones anyway. There could be a fumbled hold in there somewhere, but no big holds that cost him a football game anyway. And a net punting average that's in the top half of the league. And that's all I really care about is the net punting average. I don't really care how he gets there. And if he's a sixth round draft pick and he finishes in the top half of the league, I think the Ravens then will have converted, and also does the things a holder that I'm talking about. Then the Ravens will have converted the value they have from Randy Brown of a guy who, is significantly better than average. Because if he's in the top half of the league, you don't know where that is. He could be in the 70th percentile, but it could be in the 60th percentile, but be in the 90th percentile as a holder. And then we'd be really excited about those combined results. So that's all I want from a good season, 60th percentile season. I want a top half of the league punting result on a net basis and a good year as a holder.
Yeah, perfectly reasonable.
All right. What does a great season look like to you?
A great season for me is not necessarily, you don't have to be Jordan Stout in year four and become a Pro Bowler and first team All-Pro, none of that crazy stuff. But for me, it's just become a field flipping weapon, you know, and the kind of speed running stout development arc from you know, as far as that point, as far as just being consistent and being able to consistently pin opposing teams back in their own 20s. If he's not necessarily lead the league, but like, you know, in the top half, like he's a top half of the league, or even top 10 as far as punts of opposing teams inside their opposing 20, that would be considered great, I think. And just, you know, just being and helping, I had another note in here, just helping Keandre Jackson lead the league in special teams tackles. So that guy's the demon out there. And if he doesn't outkick his coverage, that guy will be making a lot of tackles, and they'll be making the Pro Bowl together, possibly.
Oh, that sounds good to me. That's a lot of good stuff in there. I'll have him. The one big thing that he talked about was the in 20 or the pin back punts. He had a lot of that at Michigan State, and they were still punting from midfield a fair amount. And you'll see that on his highlights, actually, because a lot of his punts that are down inside the 10-yard line were from midfield, and they had some that were down like at the one. Seems to do a very good job of controlling the ball to keep it out of the end zone. He had 20 in 20 punts, only one touchback. That's a fantastic ratio. It's almost an unrepeatable ratio in terms of what he's doing. They do a lot more at the NFL level to try and fool the defense effectively. I think the return man will often come up and you jump 6 yards in front of the ball, like he's going to catch the ball and get the defenders to stop and turn and get ready to tackle him. It takes a really good defender tracking the ball to see right through that and try and go make a play on it to keep it in play. But anyway, great year last year in that regard. So anyway, here's my great season. Elzinga's cut prior to the preseason for the 90-man roster spot. That would mean they have all the trust they need coming out of OTAs, so that he is even in the early week or so of camp, to know that they can go ahead and reassign that 90-man spot. And maybe also that Elzinga isn't going to provide them value like Corey Vedvik did in terms of a guy they could trade, they could flip for a pick. Sometimes, you know, you really got to harvest that value from what Randy does in terms of scouting these guys. But then the other component of this is Ryan is never challenged for the punt role. He absorbs the teaching from Cook and Brown to become one of the best holders in the league as a rookie, including some long range success for Loop. It's nice. We actually saw some of that today. He flashes both hang time and directional punting as a rookie, with net average in the top third of the league. So the good season was in the top half. The great season is in the top third, and I've got him also having a better holding year. I don't think I could do more than that, you know, qualitatively or certainly quantitatively to come up with anything that I'd be more comfortable with.
Yeah, sounds great to me. I did have one other note in there. If we can really channel his inner Sam Cook and start getting in some of those the fake punt passes, and you know, maybe get a little creative there.
You go.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in Baltimore for a while, so that's something that that'd be good. Did Jordan Stout even throw a pass?
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, like, did Stout ever do that? I'll look up his Pro Football Reference page right now.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that. Well, I introduce the next player here, and then we'll talk about this. So we're going to talk about Kyle Hamilton second, and it's when these pairings are established, you get like an A and a C player, or you get two B players. That's generally the way that I try and combine them. And Hamilton obviously is the main event of this episode. AP1 honors for the second time in three seasons. He did it in 23 and 25 with an AP2 sandwiched in 24. He remains the Ravens' most versatile defender. Takes away the strong side of the football field. And at this point, I don't think it would necessarily be a complete upset if he didn't make the Hall of Fame, but it would not be a good thing. It would be probably, I think he's probably got a 50% chance or more to make the Hall of Fame as of right now. And it's a matter of converting it. I don't think he even has to have he needs longevity, but I don't think he needs to win a championship to do it at the current rate of Pro Bowls.
Yeah, for defenders, you don't even, like I said, championships kind of go out the window when it comes to defenders, because there are so many Hall of Fame defenders that didn't even, like, sniff a Super Bowl, you know? So, I mean, Myles Garrett's going to be one of those guys. As long as he's in Cleveland, that guy's never going to get close to one.
Dick Butkus never played a playoff game.
Wow, really?
Never.
I didn't know that.
Never.
Okay.
The Bears really sucked. He won the Defensive Player of the Year, I believe, in 1969, and the Bears were 1-13. The only guy who's ever had anything similar to that is Cortez Kennedy. The Seahawks did it when the Seahawks were like 2-14 one year.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Yeah, it's also kind of a big reason why he can't be the best inside linebacker of all time over Ray Lewis. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. All right. So what else we got here? So the Ravens have gone to lengths this year, I think, with their offseason acquisitions to try and make sure that the back end injuries do not result in Hamilton being forced to the back end, as has happened a couple of times in recent years, a couple different occasions. So we wouldn't want to, with Hawkins now appearing like he's going to be the starting free safety, and I would expect we're going to have Starks be the starting strong safety. So I think that that'll be a flip from last year, because Starks, you know, they bought into that a free safety role. Alternatively, they could just have Hawkins be a split field guy. I just don't see that. I think they play too much big nickel, and I think Hawkins makes more sense at free safety. I think you actually get more out of Starks if he has more of a robber position, ability to come downhill and make some plays on in the run game and also on short passes.
Yeah, I mean, like Starks had some really nice like open field tackles when he kind of ran the alley and got some guys down in the backfield or shortly after the line of scrimmage. Stout did never attempted a pass in a regular season game. I did find that, so I got that. But going back to the safety thing, yeah, too, I really enjoy how the Ravens kind of like went about their offseason with optimizing Kyle Hamilton in mind. You know, like just the fact that, you know, the last time he was really at the peak of his powers, not to say that these past two seasons haven't been, you know, amazing, but he hasn't been able to be maximized in the same way he was by Mike McDonald in 2023, because he hasn't had the complementary pieces around him. You know, no disrespect to Alohi Gilman, but, you know, or Geno Stone, but, you know, those guys, Jalen Hawkins is an upgrade over both of those guys. So I expect them to have one of the better three safety trios in the league this year.
Yeah, well, certainly Starks and Jalen Hawkins are the best two back end guys he's ever played with. Absolutely, Marcus Williams is pretty good. You know, for 22 and 23, I guess he was a pretty good player, and then he just completely fell off the table. And even in 22 and 23, he was working through some injuries to get playing time. But he's good on a per snap basis when he's there. But there's no comparison to Hawkins and Starks in terms of the quality of that back end pair.
Absolutely.
All right. What else we got to talk about? I mean, again, played well against the run, made numerous varied contributions as a pass defender. He's the best horizontal defender in the game, as people who listen to this pod a lot have heard me say. It takes away the strong side of the football field. So you typically have three of your five eligible receivers on that side, a tight end that's often in line, a slot player, and a receiver in a kind of a standard 3-by-1 pro set. You that's what you typically have, and you have an X receiver alone on the other side. Hamilton is scares the hell out of quarterbacks trying to throw short on that side. And sometimes they still try it, but he's very effective at disrupting that.
He's the screen killer, man. I mean, I feel like every generation there's like a bona fide screen killer, whether it's a safety or a particular linebacker that just has the nose for the ball, knows how to kind of weave through that traffic, and that's Kyle Hamilton for this current generation, man. I mean, if anything, like dialing up a screen pass or even checking to one of your quarterback to audible screen pass with him on his side of the field is coaching malpractice at this point. Because even Hamilton even knows it at this point. Like, he'll get up after every time he makes one of those plays and be like, "Why do you do that? Better than that. If you must tell me, watch a film on me. If you're running a screen to my side, like whether it's a running back, a slot receiver, X receiver, whoever's getting that ball is getting that smoke on that side of the field."
He's certainly been ridiculously good in that capacity. I don't remember if it was 23 or early 24 that he had the incredible tip ball interception against Deshaun Watson.
That was 23, I believe.
23. So 3 or 4 yards off the line of scrimmage, he lined up. They left it right open for Njoku. They just put the bait on a hook out there for him to get a pass that was uncontested on that sideline, except there was somebody directly charging into the passing lane. And that play was completely schemed up. That was exactly the result that was schemed up for that play. And Hamilton tipped it to himself. It's one of the easiest walk-in touchdowns. It literally was a walk-in touchdown. Dude,
for some reason, some of the like most iconic Kyle Hamilton plays in games have been in Ravens losses. When you think about that game, they lost that game to the Browns. You think about the Colts game, we had 3 sacks of Gardner Minshew coming off the same side of the field. They lost that game too. It's like some of his best work, they just goes right down until you almost forget about it in hindsight because they lost the game. But when you look back, I'm like, wow, Hamilton made these crazy plays. Oh, the Ravens lost that game.
And it was probably no coincidence last year that in the game against the Steelers in Week 18, Hamilton's injury really was the toll of doom for the Ravens in that game. And Collinsworth was right on top of it at the time. He said, this is an enormous moment in this game. Kyle Hamilton, you know, this is a large part of the Ravens' defense. And I'm paraphrasing, but he had it right, no doubt about it. What else we got to say about this? So much he does well in terms of the game. Let's talk about his metrics here for a second. 7.7 yards per target was kind of a step back from previous years. Not utterly terrible, but the 112.6 OPR wasn't good. He did allow three TDs this last year. He didn't have an interception. He did have his best tackling year in 2025, just a 7.1% missed tackle rate and a 33-8 stops to missed tackle ratio. I do think he's a player who will benefit more than others from the Ravens having a decent pass rush again. The corners really can use it too, but I think Hamilton specifically in that slot role has a good chance to pick up some of the trash underneath that may accrue from some good pass rush.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, the coverage unit as a whole last year really suffered. Like, I mean, that losing Madubuike, man, sent such a ripple effect up the spine, not just the spine of defense, but everything, everybody in the back end, with the exception of Shidobe Awuzie, who had a pretty, really good year in coverage, struggled mightily in coverage. I mean, I think I saw a metric where Nate Wiggins and Marlon Humphrey were 1-2 as far as most receiving yards given up last year. This is kind of crazy to me. This that harmonious relationship between the front end and the back end couldn't be more evident than what the 2025 Ravens were. And even
this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
An elite player like Kyle Hamilton was so susceptible to it, and it'll be great to see them, you know, not just invest in getting himself up in the back end, but also in the front end with Trey Hendrickson and Zion Johnson and Calais Campbell, and hopefully a healthy Madubuike.
They are so closely tied together. The pass rush and the play of the coverage unit are so closely tied together, like pitching and defense, in terms of how much one can help out the other and vice versa. It's a very heavily linked situation. You know, one thing that has been asked about is whether or not there's a new role for Hamilton with Minter coming to town. And I really don't believe that's in the cards. I think Hamilton stays at slot corner. Minter played Derwin James there when he was with the Chargers. He was not here, I don't believe, when Hamilton came into the league in 22.
No,
it
wasn't. Think.
I said, like 17 to 21 was his time with the Ravens or back approximately then.
Yeah, because he went to was it Vanderbilt and then to Michigan for yep.
And then on back onto the Chargers with Harbaugh. So he wasn't there, but he's played a very similar player in that position. And in fact, the Ravens tree of coaches with, if you consider Minter as part of that, because he came from, you know, the Harbaugh tree originally, well, the both Harbaugh tree, but the John Harbaugh tree originally from his first NFL experience or from his early NFL experience. All three of the great slot corner safeties that are changing the game of football right now with Emmanuel and Hamilton and Derwin James all came from that tree. And now the entire NFL is really trying to catch up with that. They would love to play big nickel as the most common run defense, or as a run defense you use even half the time against the runs. The Ravens can do it more than that, but you know, they're in a position where they've got a player, and it's almost like superstar quarterbacks. There's not enough to go around right now. I think we're headed that way, but there's not enough to go around right now. It is the athletic pool is a difficult one. It's a difficult match to have, you know, the size, the speed, a lot of cases, the desire to play that position. They don't necessarily exist, but there are more guys. There were more guys in the draft this year that kind of felt that or were in that mold.
Yeah, well, that's what makes guys like Kyle Hamilton and Minori and Derwin James such unicorns. Is that just because they're built like condors, but also they have that mentality. If you have a guy who's built like a condor with a linebacker mentality, but could also play and has the mind, the cerebralness of a defensive back in the ball hawk. So having that, all three of those things make it a trifecta, you're not going to find that every year in a draft. You'll be lucky to find that once every 5 years, once every, you know, 3-4 years. Like, you know, you went from Derwin James in 2018 to Kyle Hamilton in 2022, and then Nicky Minori last year. So we're talking about gaps in between. There have been very athletic, big-bodied, long-limb safeties have come into the league since then, and teams just haven't been able to find that kind of role for them, or just find a kind of player that's able to put everything together. And who's to say Nick Emmanuel would have been Nick Emmanuel this year without being in that system with the Mike McDonald? So I think having a coach that can kind of unlock and knows what to do with a player like that is really key to their development arc in becoming that kind of a star player.
Yeah, that's a great point, Josh. It's a fantastic point. It requires a coach who knows how to use that kind of a defensive asset, that kind of a defensive chess piece. There have been other guys in the past. Buda Baker, some people would say he fit into that. And who's the one I'm thinking of? Well, Jamal Adams probably would be somebody that people would put in that category. Now, you could say, well, there's differences and whatnot, but Jamal Adams is a great pass rusher who happened to play defense. Rodney Harrison, people might put in that class. And then the Honey Badger.
I was going to say him too.
Yeah, so there have been a handful, but you're right. I mean, there isn't one every year. And McNeil Warren looked like he might be that kind of player this year. But there were a few others in this draft. I really counted maybe three guys who were possibles to become that. But it's not that easy, because not only do you have to have basically the athletic attributes, which are at the very top of the defensive class, regardless of position, you also, you know, have to make use of things like length very well. And that's the thing that makes Kyle so special, is he looks like Ted Hendricks in terms of applying leverage to opponents. There's very few guys who are built like he does, who can push offensive tackles around. And you know, he could do it because of leverage, and he's remarkable in that respect.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the Wimby of the NFL. You know, as far as a guy who that's just like, that guy is absurdly long and absurdly athletic, and he can do all these different things, and it's just amazing to see, you know, day in and day out. But yeah, Kyle Hamilton is by far the most integral, even though he may not wear the green dot, he's the most integral piece of this defense. You know, I call him the ultimate skeleton key, because without him, you know, not to say that their defense will just completely and utterly fall apart, but they'd be far less dynamic and far less impactful than they would with him in the lineup.
Yeah. Well, I was just starting to get into a list of reasons why I don't think he's moving within positions. Just to go quickly through the rest of them, the team struggled to start 2025 with him on the back end. After being fixed entirely in 2024 when he moved to the back end with Washington. So they had, you know, it had been a large fix. I think the dime continues to make sense with the coverage weaknesses of the Ravens inside linebackers. So I think Roquan is okay in coverage. I don't think that's a weakness. I think he's been forced into more coverage than he might like. But I think the Ravens will stick with a dime because they want to be able to sometimes have Hamilton be a coverage guy and have Roquan be a guy who rushes the passer. And I think that you can get more value out of that than if you have him and Buchanan on the field, meaning Roquan and Buchanan on the field, or any committed nickel for that matter. And then the other thing is, you know, since the departure of Geno Stone, the Ravens haven't been able to find that split field safety they could trust. And I think they went out, they paid some money to get Hawkins. And they also, you know, picked up Kayvon Wallace. I don't know what his role is going to be on this team, or even if he makes the team. It seems like he's kind of almost a injury warranty, or an injury, you know, insurance for the Ravens coming as they go through camp, and they realize the need to maintain this safety core that goes with Hamilton.
Yeah, no disrespect to Darius Webb Jr. or anybody else who they signed as an undrafted free agent, but you needed that kind of experience, safety as a, you know, pretty much, like I said, injury protection. You can't go through these next three, four months heading into training camp in the regular season without having some of that insurance. Because, like I said, Keandre Jackson is almost this dude played zero defensive snaps as a rookie. So you can't just have those, your top three, and no depth behind them, no experience depth behind them. So I think signing him was definitely a real smart thing to do. And you're going to need some guys to play safe in the preseason, because I guarantee you Hawkins and Hamilton and Starks aren't seeing the field in the exhibition. So you're going to need more than Keandre Jackson and some UDFAs to play safety in the month of August.
It would be a good year for Keandre Jackson to basically have a Carson Vinson level of snap load during the preseason to try and see if he can fit in that half field role or as a backup free safety even. I mean, if you look at all the potential solutions, he's obviously the best possible choice over Kayvon Wallace in terms of having a fourth safety or another safety who can play the back end. If you had him, you really don't, and he proves in the preseason that he can play the position. I think you really don't need Kayvon Wallace. You go with four safeties.
Yeah, you could get Kayvon Wallace back on the practice squad as that one of those veteran guys. Honestly, yeah. I mean that's the beauty of the way they got this thing kind of structured now, that you don't have to expose a guy like Keandre Jackson to waivers and risk losing him when a guy like Kayvon Wallace was right here in what was it May for the taking. I guarantee you, unless somebody else went down, he wasn't going to find a job anytime soon unless somebody else got hurt. So I mean, no disrespect to Kayvon Wallace, but that's just kind of where he's at in his career. And he already comes with experience in a similar system, being with Mike Macdonald in 2024. So he's, you know, somewhat familiar with the style of defense. And yeah, it just kind of fitted a need and fill a need.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you all on the way on that. And I actually think that the relative ages and Keandre Jackson's outstanding year on special teams last year makes him a fairly significant candidate for poaching. First of all, if he has to pass through waivers initially, I think there's a pretty good chance he gets taken.
John Harbaugh will be all over that.
Yeah, probably. You're right. You're probably right. Then there's plenty of other Ravens-esque organizations who would, you know, whether it's the Jets or the Chargers, who would be on top of it too. And then, you know, possibly number two is if he stays on the, even if you somehow sneak him through, he's not going to last on the practice squad as soon as there's any sort of attrition across the league and teams need even a special teams player who might become a safety, because that he certainly qualifies on both considerations there as a good special teams player currently who could help you as a safety.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, let's start it off. What's a good season for you look like for Kyle Hamilton this year?
Okay. Good season. Where did I have it? It's I'm gonna say more of the same. It's kind of hard to argue with, what the results he's been putting out these past few years, right? You know, Pro Bowls, first team All Pros, that kind of stuff. But just for me, just kind of, you don't want him to change his play style, because his play style is kind of what makes him him. But I just say play with a little bit less reckless abandon sometimes, because like he's the most important piece of that defense, and sometimes that dude is just going balls to the wall all the time and putting his body in harm's way a lot. And you don't want him to like sit dial back, because that's who he is. But at the same time, it's kind of be cognizant of like, hey, I am the most important piece of this defense, and I need to be, you know, cognizant of what I'm doing. And you don't, like I said, if your teammates are rallying to tackle, and you're kind of certain the guy's going to get tackled, you don't have to be the guy to make, you know, the all-out effort and potentially dislocate your shoulder or put yourself in unnecessary harm's risk. So that's kind of like, you know, a good season for me is just like not playing with a little bit less reckless abandon. And then just kind of said more of the same. He's recorded over 100 tackles and 2 forced fumbles and 9 passes defense in the last year. I'd say more plays on the ball, because now that he has that help in the back end, he'll be able to make more plays on the ball instead of just kind of being the safety blanket for this defense. He'll be able to utilize more as a playmaker.
Okay, I'm with you. I think those are all excellent goals, and obviously more playmaking has got to be part of what would be a really good season for him. I'm not sure if it's a good or a great. I'm starting with plays slot corner and dime for the whole season for the first time, and is the rock the defense is built around. So I think that's already going to be the case, that he's really the starting point. They have a lot of good players, you know, on this defense. They have a lot of older players on this defense now that are five guys are years 10 or more on this defense, which is I don't remember the last time that's been true for the Ravens, but it hasn't been any time recently. Tackling remains outstanding with a missed tackle rate no higher than 10%, falls short of his 2023 and 24 seasons in terms of big plays and visible impact on the defense, but opposing offensive coordinators still have to figure out how to scheme against him every week.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the points that you made there, Ken, and that's kind of falls lockstep with mine.
All right, fair enough. Great season. What do you got?
I put Derwin James +++. So I kind of like the way Minter was using Derwin James in Los Angeles, but you know, to a higher degree, because Kyle Hamilton is, no offense to Derwin James, the better, more skilled player. So I just kind of put him in position to make more plays. So like I said, I think Derwin James, I have it in my notes here. Even though Derwin James hasn't, because prior to Minter's arrival, Derwin James was averaging over 100 tackles a season. And, you know, he was still in consideration as one of the best safeties in the league, was struggling with injuries. And like I said, playing with that reckless abandon, not necessarily always being there for his team because he was always hurt because, you know, it's like doing too much sometimes. But I'd just say, like, getting back to 2023 levels, I know you're never going to be able to capture that, which should have been defensive player of the year, you know, considering duration 2023 season. But I just say 23 levels of impact and splash difference making plays, you know, just, you know, as incorrect as he is to their defense, you know, like without him, you know, man, that they don't come even close to being as elite as they can be. So you got the next best thing for Mike McDonald and Jesse Minter. So I just say getting back to that 23-3 level of difference making and having those kind of plays and making plays on the ball and just like kind of having that same level of impact, you know, to kind of would quantify a great season for me.
All right. I you know, 80th percentile being equal to what probably is what almost certainly is his best season, I think is very reasonable. I maybe came in a little bit lower than you. The Ravens, what I said is the Ravens safety room is as strong as it appears on paper, with Starks taking a big step forward. I think that Hamilton can actually play a big role in Starks having a big year. There's multiple reasons for this, but part of it is Starks may be replacing Hamilton at the line of scrimmage when Hamilton rushes the passer, which allows Starks to make more big plays off of some of that pressure generated from Hamilton. I think there's opportunities for robbery in the middle of the field with Starks is rotating down, whether you want to call it matchup zone or he's actually coming down between level two and three to take away routes that might be there and trusting the corners on the outside, maybe Wiggins on that side this year to handle himself on an island. I think there's some possibilities there. And Hamilton is the starting piece. He's the foundation of this pyramid that allows obviously players like Starks and Wiggins to be more effective on the back end. The quality of the pass rush around him allows him to hunt for big plays as a complementary piece, as opposed to being the central part of any scheme. So this is part of the issue I have with the use of Hamilton, is that they're using him too much to be the tip of the spear. And I want him to be, you know, a complementary player in that.
Yeah, I was thinking in terms of video games, they keep spamming the same move, thinking, well, it's working. I'm going to keep hitting A and B and keep using this kick until I defeat the enemy. But you gotta mix it up in there. Otherwise, your guy's stamina is going to get real low. And when his stamina gets real low, he's more injury prone.
There you go. That's a good analogy there. I've got Hunts for the football as both the second man in or as more balls get batted with Campbell and a better pass rush. So Campbell is going to hopefully increase total batted balls all by himself. Hendrickson perhaps too. But I'm hoping primarily that there is more pressure in the face of the quarterback that gets the ball jarred loose where Hamilton can vacuum it up, or gets the ball put up in danger somewhere between level zero and the linebackers, where it can be, taken away that way. So Hunts for the football in that way. And not a negative word is uttered regarding his four remaining years under contract. I don't think this should happen. So even if Hamilton were to have an off year, which would be, you know, well lower than this 80th percentile, I don't think there should be any negative talk about, you know, oh my God, we still got this guy for 4 years from 27 to 30. This is, you know, the Ravens have very fortunately tied up a elite defender in the entire league for a long contract. And hopefully the Ravens are going to enjoy the nice ride in the surf on this contract.
Honestly, man, because if you look at some of the deals that these guys are signing now, they're short deals. They're 3-year deals, 2-year deals. You know, the fact that you're able to get him on a long-term extension the way that they were, you're like, yeah, he reset the market at the time, but that's going to look like chump change in a few years' time with the proliferation of the salary cap and also with some of these other – like, look at what Will Anderson is making, and then look at what Kyle Hamilton is making. You can't tell me that, you know, both of these field-tilting players who are, you know, similarly talented, and I'd even put Hamilton a couple rings above Will Anderson just because of all the things he can do front end, back end, you know, and everything in between. And Will Anderson is basically making twice what Kyle Hamilton is making, if I'm not mistaken. And
did he just get re-signed to a new contract in the last few days or something?
Like last week or 2 weeks ago, Will Anderson.
Okay, I'll take a look at that.
He got broke
over
off
40 million.
Yeah. He got broke off real big, man. Like you can, if you want to talk, I got SpotTrack up. I can pull it up here shortly. If you want to, I'll pass the baton to you.
Okay. Yeah. I think we've fairly well covered it, but I didn't know that Will Anderson had a contract. Hamilton's at a $25 million AAV at the end of this period, but that's on the extension component, I believe. And that I do believe that's going to be a inexpensive contract for what he really brings to the field in those years. So
Will Anderson's contract average is $50 million a year. So he's getting paid. Michael Parsons is at 46.5. Will Anderson's, he got a 3-year extension worth $50 million a year annually. So
okay, yeah. And so that's a three. Okay, so the 3-year extension has him signed through what year? Because he's just finished 3 years in the league.
Yeah, so he's under contract through 2030, it says.
Okay, so it's the same thing as Hamilton. So he was a rookie in, I think Will Anderson might have been a rookie 1 year after Hamilton, right? And he was a rookie in 23?
Yeah, 23, the third overall pick in 23.
Okay, so 23, 24, 25. After 25, he could be signed. So 26, 27, he's in. And then it's a 3-year extension after that. But they'd already offered him the fifth year number. So at least it's 2 years deferred, that $50 million.
Yeah.
But that's a big number.
Yeah.
That's
so his cap hit in 2026 is only 13.1, and then it jumps to 28.3, then 46.4, and 46.4 the next 2 years. And then they have an opt out in 2030, or they can have him on the roster for 2030 at $48.4 million as far as his cap hit goes.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, certainly a big number, and the Texans, I think, are smart to get him locked up as early as possible. And it does underscore a value in Hamilton that the Ravens got him for 4 extra years beyond the 5th-year option, and the Texans only got Anderson for 3 years beyond the beyond the 5th-year option.
Absolutely.
All right. Josh, always a pleasure talking football with you. Great thoughts on these players. I appreciate you taking the time to do the research on this. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah, so you can find all my Ravens Central content at Ravens on SI. So I'm over there on that with a bunch of great, amazing writers. Got Jason Lock and Flora, some other guys on there now. And we're growing and we're building this thing up really, really good. And I'm excited to be a part of it.
All right. Fantastic. Other folks out there, thanks for all your support of the show. We really appreciate it. Let's start with that. And during the expectation series, maybe there's another person who is not familiar with this show right now that you could show them how to use it. One thing we noticed from looking at some of our analytics is that a lot of people are listening to this show directly out of Chrome, which means they're literally going to the website and clicking play. And that's pretty impressive because the play button doesn't even show up properly as white on the website, but it is on the far side of that far left side of the track. There is the play button, and you just have to trust me; it's actually there. But if you could find that person who doesn't like podcasts, but they do like listening to content of this sort, but they're not familiar with a podcast app or how to download podcasts their phone and whatnot, that could be the perfect guy for us in terms of an additional customer. So thank you very much for all your support, and we'll hope you'll continue to do that. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.